if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 174. This is our 2021 Open Championship in-depth research podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss the 2021 Open Championship. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament stats and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. There'll be plenty of Open Championship banter on there. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast. You power the podcast. So we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Of course, if you can get a review to us in the next couple of days, we will read them out on the Open Championship podcast, which we will record next Tuesday. That was always, and I mean always, the biggest podcast of the year. Just in terms of our chart here, we've got 147 reviews so far from UK and Ireland, leading the way, 126 in America. We got 23 in Australia. So if you're in Australia or the United States, please send us a five-star review. We will read them out at the start of the Open, of course. And if you fancy doing it in the UK and Ireland, that would be just fine. Maybe we can extend the lead. Right. I've got one here. Great podcast. Five stars. I must listen before making my picks for the week, just based on info and knowledge. But also a good group of guys with some great humour, and that is Kissy Boy 99, and he is in Canada. Thank you, Kissy.
Lovely stuff. Was he saying that we're a bunch of jokers, Steve? Is that the sentiment?
Great humour.
Can we do plus points for the year on that then? Plus points humour rather than plus points.
Maybe we should have a humour profit and loss.
Yeah.
It'd be better than my tipping profit and loss, I know that. So, you know, I've actually got a couple in the mix this week in the John Deere lottery, so we'll see how that pans out over the next 54 holes. Right, let's forget about all that rubbish. Let's really hone down on this Open Championship that is being played next week. I know none of us have got tickets, but Paul and I have booked a trip into London next Thursday. We're going into the Big Smoke. And Paul and I could be playing the Open because we're going to one of these indoor golf centres where hopefully we can play a bit of golf on a course of our choice, a famous course, and we can have a few beverages while we're watching the first round of the Open.
Perhaps it'll improve our game, Steve, if we combine.
Well, after last Friday, the way you annihilated me, I hope it doesn't improve your game. my game was absolutely terrible last week, but we're clearly playing Sandwich. It's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because this was meant to be the 2020 Open. Now, of course, it's 2021. It's a bit of a hybrid. The field's a bit of a hybrid. We've already got a few names disappearing off the list in terms of players not coming across from America. Siwoo Kim's injured. Sung Jae-im isn't going to play. Kevin Na's decided not to wear his bobble hat over here, which is always I always like to see Kevin Na in his bobble hat. That's not happening either. So it's a bit of a fluid field, but clearly that'll all start to confirm itself over the next few days. The golf course itself, though, it is a course that we've been to, Paul, isn't it? We did venture down to Sandwich in 2011, wasn't it? 2011. Mm-hmm. I remember it well. in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, long old walk from the train station, as I recall.
If you could call it a train station, it was like literally a field and a bit of wooden decking. And yeah, middle of nowhere. The thing I always remember about it, before we got horribly inebriated, was the fact that it was so open, so desolate, and the sand dunes were just monstrous. What do you remember of your time at Sandwich?
Yeah, it's a proper Lynx, isn't it? That's essentially you're walking around, and it's none of this manufactured malarkey. It's the real deal. And when the conditions, as they did that year, turn, it can create a proper test. And as ever, these Lynx tracks are only as tough as the conditions, aren't they? And yeah, when it's dry or when it's windy, when it's rainy, I think it brings a number of kind of old heads to the table, to the equation. To, you know, the experienced players can really start to come to the fore. I'm not sure we're going to get that this year. I mean, we can go through the weather in a few minutes, but if the conditions are soft, if the conditions are benign, then these courses still are there for the taking. So that would be interesting. And again, we're a week out, so it's always difficult to draw firm conclusions as to what you should expect. But I guess, you know, we always tend to prefer to see an open where, you know, maybe single digits under par, 4, 6, 8 is winning. But I'm not convinced you're going to get that this year. I think you're going to see something that's far more deeper in terms of the scoring, which would be a shame for the course, because I think the course holds up extremely well to tough conditions and lends itself to a trickier test.
I don't think we're going to it's going to take anything away from it, because it's a Lynx course. It's going to play tricky. Even if the leaders are able to score well in it, you're still going to see plenty of disasters and struggles from players. So, you know, and if it can, as long as it can separate the field a bit and you know, show who's playing the best golf of the week, or who are, you know, the top contenders of the week, then it doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, they're 10, 12 under par, or, you know, 1, 2 under par. I mean, you remember when Stenson won? I mean, Stenson and Phil were miles under par, and it took nothing away from it. It was extremely exciting.
Yeah, an incredible final day. Yeah, it was just a different Open, wasn't it? In the respect that it was far more scoreable then, and kind of not what you would you'd expect. But, you know, we can't change conditions. We can't change the likelihood of wind or rain or dry summery conditions, which if we get in the UK are usually fleeting and very short lived. But, but perhaps we
I'm going to make a prediction. Masters 10 under par, PGA Championship 6 under par, US Open 6 under par. I think that the Open will be double digits under par to the winner. Yeah. It'll be the easiest of the four majors this year, just based on the course conditions that we know. You know, we can go into that in a slightly more detail, and also I just don't think the wind's going to be at that velocity where it's causing major headaches.
No. We'll see. Like, we're a week away from weather happening in this part of the world, and it can change like at the snap of a finger. So the other thing to bear in mind is that the UK Fire Service, their hoses are nowhere near as powerful as the US Fire Service. So, you know, if there's a bit of dryness over the coming days to keep that course firm and fiery, add in even something as light as like 6, 7, 8 to 10 miles an hour winds out there, and a firm, fast course, it starts to play havoc.
Paul mentioned 10 to 15. I'm just looking at an early wind finder here. I think, Friday could be Friday could be interesting. It's saying up to 20, which that would start to become meaningful, seriously meaningful.
Listen, 10 to 15 when you're at the coast, like, the wind has just a bit more weight to it, no matter what the wind speed is, or as I say, it always has a bit more torque. So yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get bogged down in score predictions here, lads. I mean, it's you know, there's only one open in the under or in the plus minus par era that's got into double digits here at Sandwich, and that was Greg Norman in '93. Like, the last two that were here, Ben Curtis won at 1 under par, and Darren Clarke won at 5 under par. Now, those were different pars for the course, but
Yeah, but then you had Greg Norman winning at 13 under in 93.
Yeah.
When it was benign. So anyway, the steer I've got for listeners, Paul Larson on Twitter. That's who you need to be following. Effectively, he's the head greenkeeper at Royal St George's. So it's at capital P, Paul, capital L, Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N, then capitals R-S-G. Follow him on Twitter because I've been following him for about 4 months. I know Paul's been following him now for a good 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, Nick Faldo was on the course on the 7th of July. You get all this information. But just basically, he's constantly taking and giving updates about on every day what the ground crew are up to, what the condition of the course is. He answers questions as well. So people have already asked him about, you know, how, are you happy with the ground conditions, the softness of the course? He actually said the other day, Paul, didn't he, that he would like it firmer.
Yeah, I mean, it has been quite wet over here in England over the last couple of months, and you know, Kent hasn't escaped that. So it's softer than they would that he would like, than you know, the ground staff would like. And if you combine a softish course, and you know, from what I'm seeing in the forecast, we're likely to see the chance of rain all the way up until Thursday. You combine a softish course with relatively light winds, and notwithstanding what Barry said, and I do tend to agree that any wind gets exacerbated by the coast. But it still feels to me that it won't be a Darren Clark style tough Open Championship this year. It'll be closer to the Greg Norman style, would be my assumption on the conditions.
Paul Larson is like he's probably one of the people who is most enjoying Twitter at the moment. Really good follow.
Yeah,
I like his rock star hair. He describes himself as a Robert Smith of the golf world.
Nice.
He looks like a decent chap, doesn't he? And he's a definite follow. So, listeners, if you want to get bang up to speed with how the course is and how it's going to play, and just get plenty of decent visuals of the golf course, that follow on Twitter, absolutely essential. So what do we face here? Let's have a quick look at Royal St George's, a quick kind of overview. As Paul said, a true classical links test. It actually held the first Open held on English soil back in 1894. That kind of gives you the heritage that we're dealing with. Interesting here in terms of winners, we have had a mix. Greg Norman is the only golfer around here to have recorded a score that was actually double digits under par, and that was 13 under 267 in 1993. That to me feels kind of right, actually. Maybe 13, 15, that's my gut view sitting here a week ahead of everything. Apart from that, though, it's all been five under, but, you know, it's all weather. And we say it's about coastal golf. You know, it wouldn't matter if it was the Scottish Open this week at kind of Renaissance, which is as man-made as you'll ever get. If that was blowing 35, 40 miles an hour up in on the Firth of Forth this week, you wouldn't be seeing the scoring that we are going to see this week in terms of they're just taking it apart. So, you know, it's one of those, especially if you've got DraftKings teams. Especially if you're built, if there's one event that for me I don't like to get involved with anti-post, and I wouldn't want to set my teams up way too early on DraftKings, it's the Open, because it's so weather dependent. And you know, you could see on a Wednesday that the weather's completely, you know, 180'd, and there's all of a sudden there's going to be a draw bias AM rather than PM, or PM over the AM, and it could just absolutely screw with your bets and screw with your DraftKings teams. So it's one of those, really. My understanding is, please correct me if I'm wrong here, guys. I think it plays as a par 70, and the length I've got here is 7,189 yards.
Yeah, it's not overly long, is it? By any stretch.
The fairways are fescue and bent grass. I'll go into my agronomy bit. The rough is fescue and bent grass. The greens themselves are 40% bent grass and 60% fescue. So it is a genuinely, yeah, it's just genuine links when you're seeing 60% fescue on the greens. It's definite, definite Lynx territory. The only thing I'll say, and it's difficult to take a lot of information from one renewal because, you know, in-depth renewal data-wise, we're looking at 2011, you don't get any strokes gain data because clearly strokes gain was just, it wasn't around in 2011. But I just look at some of the metrics that we saw on a very, I mean, I remember being there, it was pretty calm on the Thursday, scoring was okay from memory. Was this, I think this is the 2011 renewal. Clearly Darren Clark won, but I can remember Lucas Glover being at the top of a leaderboard at some point. Mm. Thomas Bjorn and Tom Lewis were 5 under par, 65 leaders on Thursday. They had then Glover, Jimenez and Webb Simpson, of all people, at 4 under. And then I remember it clearly. We were there on the Friday, Paul, and it started off quite tranquil and sunny, and then all hell broke loose, and there was wind, there were squally showers, there was plenty going on. Darren Clark and Lucas Glover were the leaders on Friday, and the score had actually gone backwards to 4 under par.
Yeah.
Thomas Bjorn, Chad Campbell, whatever happened to Chad Campbell, almost won the Masters. Mm. Miguel Angel Jimenez and Martin Kaymer were tied for third place going into the weekend. From there, the weather didn't really get any better. Friday was nasty, wet, rainy, very, very strong winds. And I think, I remember Peter Alice saying in the coverage for the Sunday, it was literally all seasons in one day. There were calm spells. There were spells when the sunshine was out and it was glorious. There was also tremendous rain and wind at certain parts. It was one of the most wind-affected majors that I can recall. I know that it's the Open. And then Darren Clark was masterful, 5 under par winning. He had a 3-shot victory over American Raiders, Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson. Thomas Bjorn was in fourth. Chad Campbell, Anthony Kim, there's another great name, and Ricky Fowler were in the each-way places, tied for fifth. And your old mucker, Paul, Raphael Jacquelin, in eighth spot.
Yeah.
That particular week, we had 4 players under par. But I think this is all pretty meaningless, really. I don't think that's going to happen again this week. I did say to you, Paul, Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, even Sergio Garcia was in a tie for ninth. I'm also throwing into that mix Lucas Glover. That, to me, from an American comp course, don't shoot me down in flames, but it screams Beth Page Black outside of New York. There's all of those players have done fantastically well around Beth Page. Now, I know Beth Page isn't a coastal golf course, but what it is, it's a very tough golf course.
Yes. Yeah. That's the clearly closest correlation, isn't it?
All of those names. I mean, US Open 2009, Lucas Glover won it. Dustin Johnson was second in the PGA to Brooks Koepka a few years ago. Ricky Fowler, I think, he was winning there one of the Barclays events and then went backwards, and Patrick Reed won it on the Sunday. There's a lot of... And Phil Mickelson's also got a fantastic... he was second at the Open that Glover won there in 2009. I think he might have also had another second. But anyway...
All right, Steve.
Beth Page.
Dip into the memory banks there, Steve. What are the particular things players do really well when they're scoring well at Beth Page? Well, long approaches.
Well, long off the tee, definitely. It's a power course, isn't it, Beth Page? For me, it's a total driving golf course.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when Brooks Koepka was taking. You know, he's basically the dog legs, just going straight over the corners. And to me, it's a driver's golf course, Beth Page. And yes, it's a long course, so you've got to be good with your long to mid-irons.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
There might be something in there.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because generally, there would have been very similar fields, so you can kind of see there's going to be a correlation in terms of some of the names up there. Yeah, I don't know. It's in the fullness of time, we'll see if there's some relevance in that or not. But yeah, it's a tricky course, and I guess if we were looking at a similar kind of you know, marginally under par winning total, then you could infer that similar players with similar characteristics are going to be able to grind it out. But don't know. We'll see.
That also shouts to me as well, Quail Hollow, where Thomas won the PGO.
Yeah.
Mickelson's got a fantastic record there. Lucas Glover's done well around there. I'll have a little dig into it for today just to see if we can find any courses that really correlate across from an American perspective. But yeah, that was just something that literally slapped me in the front of the forehead as soon as I started reading those names the other day. Who knows, eh? What are you looking for this week, Paul? You're in the actual chair, aren't you, in terms of the headline tips?
Yeah.
You're our open guru.
I think, similar to the Masters, there are an awful lot of trends that you can dig into which help you whittle the field down. And you can get bogged down with, you know, lopping people off your shortlist for some historical trend, but some of them really are quite logical, and some of them are really quite stark in terms of how it differentiates the field. And there's the preview piece that you've put together, which is on the site now, which I'm sure we can link to in the pod description, goes through a number of these. But I've taken a few of the key points that you've put in that preview piece and kind of used it to whittle the field down. So I'll take you through that, because I think it is quite logical, what some of these points, and I think it does get us to a relatively logical conclusion, or kind of semi-conclusion, I guess, when you work through it. The first point I've taken from your preview is that the average Open appearances from the last 9 winners is 12 appearances, which means those players who are less experienced, debutants, those who've only turned up once or twice, or haven't had the experience of an Open Championship or Open Championship conditions, are at a disadvantage. And I think there's logic to that. I think you need to be able to understand the manner and the way in which you can play and succeed at an Open Championship. Looking through those winners, Jordan Spieth was the player with the least appearances prior to winning. He had 4. Ernie Els had 21, so the other end of the spectrum with Els. So I don't think there's a reason why you would exclude some of the players who've played a large number of times, because they've got an awful lot of experience. In tough conditions, I think those guys really could come to the fore. But equally, those players who haven't played before or only have 1 or 2 Open Championship appearances may well be ones to exclude from your list already. And some of the names, if you take all of the debutants out, and there are an awful lot of debutants, don't forget we missed last year, so the last one we had was 2019, so there's a whole year's gap effectively.
Yeah, Morikawa won't have played an Open at all, will he?
He hasn't, though. I mean, some of these names, I'll read through a few, if you get as specific as taking out players who've played either one or no Open Championships, you'll lose players such as Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Scotty Scheffler, your old mate Will Zalatoris, Wolf, Burns, Higo, Max Homer. No Homer bet this week, Barry. What are you going to do? In terms of one performance, Neiman, Corey Connors, Christian Buswedenhout, Bob McIntyre. I mean, he finished 6th on debut. But if you're getting as specific as taking out players that don't have a minimum of at least 2, I mean, I've been quite generous here, because Spieth was the winner, as I said, with 4 appearances. If you take out everyone who's got less than 2 appearances, you are already down from this kind of embryonic field to 90 players from a starting point of over 150. And as I said, there's an awful lot of debutants in there as well. And these big names are dropping straight out of the list. Taking that a step further, 13 of the last 14 winners had an Open Championship top 10. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen was the exception here in 2010. He arrived off the back of 3 missed cuts at the Open Championship and then won. I guess, you know, looking back at that Open, that was the one at St Andrews, wasn't it, where there was an incredible draw bias. And Louis got absolutely the right side of that. and turned an incoming Open Championship form of miscut into a win, and he won at what, 250-1? I'm going to say
250. I think it was late. He was late early, wasn't he? And he was right in a sweet spot.
Yeah, absolutely. But take Louis out of the equation. I mean, even Shane Lowry. Shane came in 2019. He came to the Open off the back of four consecutive miscuts at his previous Open Championships, but he did have a ninth place finish. And as I say, 13 of the last 14s had an Open top 10. So not only the experience of playing in an Open is a good indicator, but also having had a top 10 finish. And again, if you get as specific as taking out all of the players that don't have a top 10 finish, then you'll lose the likes of John Rahm, who's best is 11th, Justin Thomas, 11th, Patrick Cantlay, who's best is 12th, Bryson DeChambeau, awful record at the Open Championship, and his best is 51st. English, Simpson, Berger, Matt Fitz, all of these players will drop out if you exclude everyone who doesn't have a top 10 at the Open. And I make that, you would automatically straight down to 38 players on your shortlist if you just take out those two factors. Which,
oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. You're starting to get to something a bit more manageable here. The other point, there's quite a long section in the preview about current form, which is quite right, because if you look back at these previous winners, going back to 2010, every winner had a top three finish in one of their last seven starts, coming in with some kind of positive form and, you know, contending form over the last few weeks and months seems to be an absolute must. And again, I don't think you just rock up at an Open Championship off the back of no form and find a way to go over the line.
No.
And again, if you push out, again, top three, maybe that's a bit specific. I've pushed it out to top five. If you're going to say, well, players need to have had a top five finish in their last 7-8 starts, you're losing the likes of Brant Snedeker, Justin Rose, Tony Finau hasn't had a top five finish for a while. Ricky Fowler, Barry, that's going to put a damper on some of your bets for the week as well, isn't it? Ricky Fowler dropping out of that stage. Dustin Johnson, Jason Day.
Well, I was going to say, I'm just looking at Dustin Johnson. 25th, 19th, 10th miscut, 48th, 13th miscut of the Masters.
Yep.
You know, that to me isn't the form of a Open Championship winner who's sitting there third in the market, 16-1. In fact, he's as short as 11-1 with Unibet. You know, that's just a terrible bet.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting trends here, aren't they?
They are. And I think current form is fairly critical. Again, taking that to the nth degree, 14 of the last 20 winners had already won a title of some description in that calendar year today.
Yeah.
So Shane had won in Abu Dhabi right at the start of the year, the Rolex Series event. Francesco Molinari, he'd won at Wentworth a few weeks before. Jordan Spieth had won the Travelers. Henrik Stenson had won the BMW International over on the European Tour in Germany a few weeks before as well. So the last four winners all came in with solid winning form recently. And again, if you take out all of the players that haven't got a win this year so far, you'll lose the likes of Xander, which well documented and well discussed that Xander hasn't had a win for a while. Louis Oosthuizen. Now, Louis is going to be incredibly popular this week. He's coming off the back of, what, two consecutive second place finishes at Opens? Or he's had two this year in any way. So he's going to be popular. An Open Championship winner of the past, but he doesn't have that recent win. Shane Lowry's not won since his Open Championship win in 2019. Martin Kaymer, who we've discussed ad nauseum on the podcast, hasn't won. Tommy Fleetwood, who's been off the boil. Although again, Tommy showed a little bit in Scotland yesterday, and again, you know, it doesn't take much for players to appear on betting slips and in people's lineups as soon as they start to show a bit of form like that. And Tommy's always a popular player. So, yeah, again, if you take all of those out, take the current form aspects out, take the win in 2021 out, and that takes you down to a list of just 11 players. And I think that's what managed.
11 players?
Yeah.
Oh, I can hear our listeners saying, Paul, please, who are those 11 players, Paul? Yeah. I can hear them. They're coming. It's coming through the walls of the office. Please, this Paul, tell us who are the who's this, the golden 11.
This is the chance, Paul. Set up a Patreon.
So yeah, pens and pencils.
Is it going to be 10 quid, or what are we charging?
One quid per player, 11.
Yeah, okay.
In the post analysis, it will be interesting to see if the winner does come out of this list of 11. But I'll read them through in current world ranking order. Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy, Tyrrell Hatton, Hideki Matsuyama, Paul Casey, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Mark Leishman, Stuart Sink, and Brandon Grace is number 11. And there's some, I look at that list and I'm not uncomfortable with many of the names on there. Many of the names would actually be ones that you could quite see going well at an Open Championship.
Mark Leishman came into my mind yesterday afternoon because he finished like a train at the Travellers, didn't he, last time out? Finished second. Third.
I fell into the Leishman trap in 2019. I got all big on Leishman and chose the wrong. I was kind of have Leishman and Lowry sort of in my head as similar guys. I don't know why. Maybe just the way they hit the ball or something like that. But I always had them together, and I chose Leishman completely. We all overlooked Lowry. It was amazing. Everybody got Rory focused. But I think I've kind of lost the Leishman love after just, I can't seem to catch him at the right time. Expect him to win and he doesn't. You're like, you know.
The thing with Leishman, Barry, I don't know if you, for me, the weakest part of his game is his driving. I'm just looking at his numbers from the Travellers. Third for strokes gained off the tee at the Travellers, which was his best driving performance since 2020 Sony Open. And then, you listen to this, 2020 Sony Open, he was second for strokes gained off the tee and he finished 28th. He then went to his beloved Torrey Pines 2 weeks later and won the Farmers Insurance Open. He was third for off the tee, 11th tee to green, 9th for putting at the Travellers, and he's 66-1 for the Open. He's got a couple of top 10s as well, hasn't he, from memory, at the Open.
Yeah, he has. Leishman.
One up at Liverpool. He made the playoff at St Andrews with Zach Johnson, didn't he, and Jason Day, 2015.
That's right. Yeah, wow. He's one of those players that I've regularly considered for major championships in general, but the Open Championship would seem to be the one that does lend itself best to him. And
very interesting.
He's got some winning form this year. Was it the pairs event that he won? I forget exactly.
Yeah, he won it with Cam Smith down in Louisiana.
That's right. Yeah.
Are you counting that as a win? Oh, well, come on,
Barry.
It's a 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour, so he's got to, isn't he?
The criteria was as loose as a win of any description in the.
Yeah.
He was also fifth at the Masters, so he's got a recent major top 10 about him as well. I only follow him on the PGA Tour, but when you look at coastal events, two-time winner at Torrey, he's won at Torrey Pines, he's like 3 second places there. His form by the coast, Sony Open, Kapalua, he's always a coastal positive player, Mark Leishman. And because he's Australian, he played a lot of his golf around, Victoria and a lot of coastal golf courses. So, I like that. I like that a lot, got to be said.
Yeah, two or three names within that. Hideki Matsuyama had to pull out of the Detroit event with COVID, didn't he? So he's in the shortlist, but remains to be seen how that will or won't affect him coming into this. He's got a top 10 at the Open in the past, so it's not, I don't think we should assume or exclude him on the basis of it potentially not fitting an Open Championship for his style of play. Rory, I don't know, again, it still seems like work in progress to me at the moment, but, could be proven wrong. What about Lefty?
The thing about Rory is it's always going to be a work in progress until he just pops and wins. This time round, it feels like he's not going to telegraph it massively. It'll just bang, win. And it'll just click for him. You know, he in his early years, he was always so like hot or cold. You know, he was either on or he's off. And now he's achieved that kind of level of his B game is usually very good. And then, you know, he'll have a top 10 and everyone's saying you're playing awful, but he's like, he's had a top 10. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, Rory will be questioned until he's not questioned with his next win. And then 2 days later, they'll be talking about why he hasn't won recently. You know, when's he going to win again? So it's, I have Rory at, what is he, 12s? 12s?
Well, this is it, yeah. It's an awful
price.
You expect some of the prices will start to move around a little bit as of today, as of Friday, before, as some of the bookies start to push out their final stance and their final markets for the Open, because we're still in this anti-post territory with most of them at the moment, and some of the pricing and some of the market isn't particularly attractive. From the position I look at it at. But yeah, 12-1, I don't think you'll get much more. You might get 14s, I suppose, something like that. But he's a tough one for me. If I was looking right now between Rory McIlroy at 12-1 and Brooks Koepka at 16-1, it wouldn't even be a conversation. It'd be an automatic Brooks Koepka bet for me if it was between just the two of them.
I've just been sitting here doing some basic maths, which is my want. Average winning price of the Open over the last 11 renewals, so 2010 through... what am I talking about? See, I've got this wrong. I've got it wrong because I've done the wrong division. Let me do the right division. Because I was thinking that we're in 2021 and there was...
11. Oh, yeah, yeah, the 2020.
81-1, the average winning price of the Open since 2010.
That's the kind of price point I could really get excited about. Let's just
Lowry 70-1, Molinari 33-1, Spieth was the 16-1 favourite. How open was that? 30-1 Stenson, 125-1 Zach Johnson. Those are the last five.
Yeah, and the outliers kind of push out that average a little bit.
And then, you've got 250 with Oosthuizen and 200 with Clark early doors, 45 with Elds, 20 with Mickelson, 18-1 Rory McIlroy 2014. All averages through, 81-1.
So if you take out the two wild ones, we're down to about 60-1, maybe 50 to 60-1. So
it's Mark Leishman then, yeah? 66s.
Oh, damn it, I just made your case for you. I don't believe it.
What about Brandon Grace, Paul? He's 66-1 as well. He's won this year, isn't he, down in Puerto Rico?
He has won this year. He's coming in the back of form of 4th and 7th. He was 6th in the Open, what, 3-4 years ago? 66-1. Yeah.
He's not on the list. Why is he not on the list?
Steve, he was on the list.
He is on the list.
He was 11 of 11, yeah. He's definitely on the shortlist. If you're going to get as specific, and again, one of the points that you made in the preview was that 18 of the last 20 winners were in the top 55 in the world. And Grace currently sits 61st. So if you wanted to get as specific as taking out the top anyone outside the top 55, then the only player you would lose is Brandon Grace. I'm not going to take Brandon Grace off of my shortlist because he's 61st rather than 55th.
He's been in the mix at both the PGA Championship where he led, didn't he, for a period, and he was also right in the mix at the US Open. So it's not as if he's coming from nowhere with his major performances this year. I mean, he was 7th at the US Open, so you can't get rid of him for a world ranking that's five spots too high, too low.
No. I think I'd struggle to get rid of Brandon Grace off my list full stop, to be honest.
So you can build a very strong mid-card of prices here, can't you? That have actually got real chances of winning it historically.
Yep.
He was first for tee to green at the US Open. Wow.
That's good, solid signs from Brandon Grace. Yeah, it's got to be said.
I'll never forget him at Chambers Bay. He had it. It was his for the taking.
And he banged it over the railway line.
This was the short par four, wasn't it? There's been a few short par fours for Grace that have scuppered him right at the business end of the tournaments and majors in particular. But he's been close, hasn't he?
You've got me licking my chops here, Paul. I think a lot of the majors this year have been very unclear. And Barry, I remember you saying it in a lot of the research podcasts that it's like, oh, it's not as clear cut as it usually is. This one, there seems to be some very strong indicators already.
Mm. Yeah, you feel like you can get a very permanent marker through a lot of names.
Yeah. Yeah, just, big names too.
Yeah, and help you make your decision process a little less hair pulling.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point.
What Lefty's on this shortlist as well. What do you guys think of his chances in general? You know, recent major winner. You
know. I think if the wind was going to be a severe factor, he'd be right in the mix. But it doesn't. He's going to be too calm, I think.
He's coming off in back of form of 62nd, 61st, 74th. So I think it's fair to say he's been dining out on his.
Yeah, but he won the PGA off form of miscut 69th. So the one thing he did do at the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit last week was drive the ball well. He was 9th for strokes gained off the tee, but the rest of the game was garbage. But if it was going to be one of these really nasty 2011 jobs where he actually got in the mix, you might fancy a bit of Phil Mickelson, but I think it's going to be a bit.
Do you think it'll be a bit too, too easy almost? Like not enough of a challenge to really focus him in?
Yeah. When you read the interviews with Phil, he loves it when it's blowing 30 miles an hour and it's all about ball flight and guts and short game. Don't think it's going to be this like that this year.
No.
Well, at least not 1 week out. Let's see what the Atlantic brings in terms of weather.
In terms of the trends, that's kind of where it leads me to. But I think it does allow you to, again, if you get if you go down to the nth degree and really quite brutal on how you remove players from the list. Because don't forget, I've taken John Rahm off that list because he's got a best of 11th at the Open Championship, and it's this top 10 finish. But that 11th could easily have been a top 10, couldn't it? And then it could be a horrible mistake in taking John Rahm, who's the current favourite for the tournament, out of the equation. And
who's going to win the Scottish Open this week?
Well, yeah.
So exactly. what price are you going to be when he wins the Scottish Open this week?
Yeah, 8-7-1 maybe. I mean, was he hovering around about 9-1 at the moment?
He's 9's biggest now at the moment. What do you reckon? So if he wins, what do you reckon? 15-2?
Yeah, he won't be any better than 8s, I don't think. So, yeah, it's. I don't know. I'm not even sure he needs to win. I think if he comes in with the top 5 and shows everyone enough form, because it's only the rust factor that you're kind of assuming that's not quite there. But from what I saw yesterday, from watching bits of the Scottish Open, there was no rust there. He was looking very, very good.
I saw him on the first tee. He looked absolutely amped straight off the. There was no smoke. It was like he was there for business. It was very impressive.
Yeah.
Shall I just run through some strokes gained trends as well before we close the pod?
Go for it.
I had a look at, last 8 weeks. This is clearly not going to include the John Deere Classic or the Scottish Open, but it goes back to the PGA. For me, I think just looking at Darren Clarke, looking at Dustin Johnson Fowler, what they did in 2011 around here, and just looking at the leaderboard, there are a lot of big hitters. I mean, driving distance over the Mickelson, DJ and Darren Clarke, they averaged out, it was 15th longest in the field between those three. Driving accuracy 14th, greens in regulation 4th, scrambling 40th, putting average 16th. I think, especially when you look at Greg Norman winning around here, who at his time was probably the longest on the golf course in terms of his power, I think there's something here about players that you can elicit a score with a little bit of accurate or booming power. So strokes gained off the tee, top 5 last 8 weeks on the across European and PGA Tour combined. John Rahm at 1, DeChambeau 2, Xander at 3, and then we've got a tie in 4th. Cantlay and Morikawa. I don't think Cantlay's got a lot of Open Championship experience, has he? But he's playing some great golf at the moment. If you then next, take that out to the top 10, Bubba's playing some awesome golf, isn't he? But I wouldn't like to see Bubba in. Could you see Bubba in contention, doing a Bubba on down back?
Bubba just, I don't know. Whenever he comes over to play the Open, he's kind of a defeated man before he tees it up on the first. on the first.
He's
hole,
part
isn't
of
he?
He's part of the bubble hat brigade, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's literally. It's like he's on a trip to the North Pole before he even kind of gets on the golf course.
It'd be like the Bahamas when he's here and it's 18 degrees next week and sunny.
Well, that's far too cold for most of the PGA Tour. 18, that's the middle of the winter. Bubba at 6, then you've got Fitzpatrick, who's been playing some nice stuff recently, and Koepka, Corey Connors, and Daniel Van Tonder for some bizarre reason. But anyway, he's in there. And I was just looking at strokes gained tee to green as well. Top 10 over the last 8 weeks. Here's some names for you. There's a tie for ninth. Guido, Bernd Wiesberger, and Shane Lowry. Shane's been playing some fantastic stuff. Eight is Jordan Spieth, which surprised me. I thought Spieth's tee to green game had fallen away recently. Seven, Matsuyama. Six, Mateus Schwab. Five, Brooks Koepka. Four, Patrick Cantlay. Three, John Rahm. Two, Colin Morikawa, and I guarantee you guys can tell me who's number one. Tee to green last 8 weeks.
Don't
the nemesis. Paul Casey.
Paul Casey,
number one.
Oh, Steve, don't. These
are stats. These aren't my opinion. And then I'll just take you through strokes gained current form last 8 weeks. Again, this is out without the Scottish, without the John Deere Classic. Jason Day at 10, Koepka at 9, Richard Bland at 8. Now, I'm doing some long shots, and Richard Bland continues to play out of his skin. 7 is Spieth. 6 is Louis, of course, Louis Oosthuizen, who does a lot of his work with the putter. A tie for 4th, Cantlay and Casey, Morikawa at 3, Guido at 2, and John Rahm number 1. Just some players that are playing some great golf at the moment.
Paul Casey, he was one of the players on that final shortlist.
Looking at Casey in the Open, though, of his last 6 attempts at it, he has 11th, and his next best result is 47th.
Mm.
3 other made cuts and 1 missed cut, and then the 2 appearances before that were a missed cut and a 54th. So you have to go all the way back to 2010 for him to have a top 10 in the Open.
One thing I will say, Paul, just I'm saying this to you as well. I've just gone back to 2015. Zach Johnson was 3rd for tee to green on his previous outing. Jordan Spieth was 1st. Frankie Molinari was 4th. You can't say the same with Shane. He was 30th. But you go he finished 2nd at the Canadian Open, 3 outings before he won the Open, and he was 9th for tee to green, 3rd for putting. So there's a lot in. I mean, what I'm saying here is these trends mean nothing really. A Mark Leishman or a Brandon Grace fit into the trend, don't they, in terms of they were absolutely bang on it from tee to green the outing before they won.
Yeah.
Grace is playing the Scottish Open, and he's playing well again, isn't he? 3 under through the first 18.
Solid enough.
There's some really interesting, fascinating trends, I think, to follow for this, potentially. It's exciting, really.
Yep. Put it all together, see where it all comes to. We've got the Scottish Open to really dig into, and you know, it looks like there's going to be some big names and big contenders who are going to, you know, they're going to raise their head above the parapet this weekend. And Justin Thomas is another one who hasn't been showing much recently yet, put a very strong round together yesterday in Scotland. And if he continues to put that together, then his price is going to get significantly reduced from the current 22-1. You could see him going off at 18-16s if he continues to hang about at that kind of level. Because
I really hope he does, because that'll push other prices out.
Yeah.
No matter what Thomas does this week, you couldn't get me to back him, especially at the price he's at.
It was only his putting, wasn't it? And I mentioned briefly in the podcast earlier this week that there had been just a very small sign that his putting had started to improve on his last outing, and perhaps he's found the solution. You know, Justin Thomas isn't a bad putter. Justin Thomas is an incredible putter when he's on his game, but he's just completely off the boil with a flat stick, or had been. But when that turns, his long game, his ball striking recently had been absolutely top notch. So potentially a danger.
We're recording this early Friday morning over in the UK. We already have a situation where Boyle Sports has switched on their real Open Championship market. They have gone 10 places each way at the Open. We also have a situation where William Hill have also gone live with their real market. They switched off the anti-post market. William Hill, as is their one, have gone 9 places each way at 50 odds for the Open this week. I expect that Paddy Power / Betfair will switch on their 10 places each way, which they tend to do for the majors today, Friday.
Yeah.
So going into the weekend prior to the Open, you're going to probably have 4 or 5 of the bookmakers that have got their real markets out and their each way place proposition in place. Mm. Which it's getting earlier and earlier, which is great, but yeah, fair play to Boyle Sports and fair play to William Hill for going so early.
They've shown their hand, although they've both been really quite consistent. In fact, a lot of the bookies have been consistent in each of the majors over the last year, haven't they? So you can kind of preempt and predict where some of these bookies are going to go. It's just a case of sitting tight and waiting for them to come up. If the player that you fancy is the right price or the right terms, then away you go.
And hold a few bullets until Wednesday night. Because if the weather could be switching right up until that point, and you could, like you said earlier, Steve, you could see a draw bias become very apparent at the very last minute.
Mm. Potentially.
Paul and I have already, I've got my, because we've had no summer at all, but virtually, we've unpacked the shorts for next week. Paul's been telling me for about four months that this is the week that summer comes to the UK.
A fleeting summer. We might get a week, 10 days.
We tend to get 10 to 12 days per summer of good weather in the UK. So apparently 4 or 5 of them are next week, Paul's been telling me forever. So I've even got the sun lotion out.
Factor 50 at the ready, Steve.
The factor 50's out. So I'm expecting good scoring conditions in Kent.
Mm.
But clearly most of the Americans will still be wearing their bobble hats in our peak of summer.
I think it'll be like a breath of fresh air. Temperatures potentially up to the low 20s, so 70, 75 degrees Fahrenheit next week. Sunny.
Yeah, but the wind chill, bobble hats. I'd love an over-under like prop bet on bobble hats, like just one of those crazy markets.
Well, now that Kevin Na's not coming across because he can't get across from America, there's travel restrictions apparently. Mm. So I don't know how the rest of the field have got across, but anyway. Kevin's taking the bobble hat number down by one, isn't he? So that's a bit of a shame. Are there any players, longer price players, Barry, before we disappear? Any names that in the market that have taken your view? I thought it was interesting. Ryan Palmer fired a nice low score yesterday in Scotland on an easy, soft golf course.
That is interesting, but he's not winning the Open Championship. No, he's not winning next week, Steve.
I don't think he's finishing in the top 10 either for an each way punt. No. Anyone that interests you at any kind of price? Because one thing I will say here, I'll just read this out. I mean, I'm taking last year's 2019's Open. Westwood was 110-1. He placed. Tyrrell Hatton was 90-1. Believe it or not, Robert McIntyre was 200-1. Danny Willett, 125-1. These were all each-way places. The year before that, Xander Schauffele was 110-1, finishing second. Kevin Kisner was 300-1. Kevin Chappell, 250-1. Eddie Pepper, 175-1. So you are getting triple-digit players in the mix every single year at the Open. Mm. As ever, it's just a case of picking the right one. I mean, JB Holmes, 200-1 the year that Stenson and Mickelson had their shootout. Was it Troon 2016, I think? Mm. Holmes was 200-1. Steve Stricker was 250-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 175-1. It's just, I mean, I'm picking some of these. I'm picking the longer shots. It's just, I'm trying to get my head around who might interest me this week. Kevin Kisner might be one. He's playing some better stuff, isn't he?
Could be, yeah.
150-1 Kevin Kisner across the board.
That's going to have my attention if I can see 10, 11 places for sure. Like, there's no way I don't back that. To state the obvious.
Yeah, this is the point, though, isn't it? It's making those decisions and conclusions right now when the markets aren't complete is...
difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. I mean, Guido, what was he, fourth at his major championship start a couple of weeks back, 150-1.
Look, Patrick Harrington is showing plenty of good form. Like, lots of it. He's gone well in Scotland, but you know, the last few weeks has been kind of eye-catching. He's seen Richard Bland win recently. He saw Phil win the last major. Like,
well, he top five at the PGA, didn't he, with Shane? It's not as if he hasn't been in the mix in the major recently, is it? By the case.
And that's even if he doesn't go well, it's still a bet you could be happy. Like, just it's fun to be on. And right now, I'm seeing prices up to 200-1 with the the really short places. But for the extended places, you're probably looking at 150, 175, maybe somebody. Will
yeah, take what 175 with William, 175 with William Hill on those nine places.
Yeah, so if we can get 175, 10 or 11 places, like, I'm not going to be able to resist that either.
Yeah, and if the conditions do deteriorate, then, you know, this kind of player who could
come through.
Find a way. Plenty to ponder.
That is the Open in a nutshell, though. We've mentioned there two players, Kisner from an American perspective and Harrington from a European perspective, that are grinders. And clearly, Harrington, a two-time winner, three-time major winner. Kisner's got finished second in a Open Championship, and you're picking him up at crazy prices. Meanwhile, you've got Bryson DeChambeau, who's got, I wouldn't be backing Bryson DeChambeau at Sandwich, 25-1. I suppose that's kind of a lot bigger than he has been. The one thing that I always remember about arriving at Sandwich, it was like almost like a moonscape. It was like a golf course I'd never seen before my own eyes. And I think, like you said, Paul, that's going to come out with a lot of the guys that are inexperienced at genuine Open Championships. Yeah. They'll arrive, they go, what is this place all about?
Mm. Yeah, proper links.
Interesting. Is that us then, chaps? Should we leave it at that?
Yep, we'll reconvene Monday evening, most likely, to talk through our final picks and then look forward to next week's main event.
Absolutely. If you've got any questions, listeners, just fire out a tweet to any of us, and we'll pick it up. If you've got any questions in the intervening period over the weekend, fire out a tweet to any of us, and we'll get back to you with a group consensus on it. Yes, I think we're going to be recording the pod early this next week. Monday potentially. So it could be. Just keep your eye on your devices. You might find that as of Monday, the actual tips podcast will be out there for you to listen to. So keep your eyes and ears out for that one. That's it then, isn't it? I hope you enjoy your Open Championship research over the weekend. Paul's going to be busily pulling his preview together. I'm doing some long shots. There'll be some first round leader bets, I expect. I might throw a couple of stakes at the Barbasol Championship as well, which is the alternate event on the PGA Tour next week. Also, I just hope that the bets that you've got left at the Scottish Open and the John Deere Classic go well for you over the weekend. And we will see you again very, very soon for our Open Championship Tips podcast. Thanks for your time, gents.
Cheers. Take care.
Cheers.
And we'll see you next week. Goodbye. If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf.